Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And today we are talking going from ashy to classy. Escaping misogyny.
Escaping misogyny.
It's a journey. And a lot of people are on the journey, hopefully.
Hopefully.
I am, I guess, if it were the Underground Railroad. I would, and I started in Georgia. I guess I would be in North Carolina. I haven't escaped yet. I'm trying.
Please be at the Potomac.
I'm trying. This is tough. It's tough for me. I know I got a long way to go.
Okay.
I'm getting there.
I need you to be at least in D.C. by now.
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. That's fair.
All right. So for this conversation,
okay,
I'm glad we have you because I don't want
to
be talking.
I'm glad to be here
because. I shouldn't be, but just set a couple ground rules. Okay. We know that when we talk about issues, and in this case, the issue is misogyny, It's inevitable that the cry will be, well, not all men are so. We do acknowledge that someone may believe that they are in the category of right. Not all men.
Right.
But yes, all men.
Every last one of y'all.
Every one of us. Because it's impossible not to be influenced by this if you've grown up on earth. I mean, every culture that I'm aware of is a patriarchal culture that would be listening to this podcast.
Yeah, okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. So you will at times be unaware of the influence, whether you've grown up and been taught certain things. Maybe you just have experienced certain things and interactions with friends and other people. And think, like, we all have blind spots. And as men, we definitely have blind spots, especially when it comes to this. And if you're honest with yourself, you can probably point out at least 10 moments where you've been guilty of something that we're going to talk about right. today. So, yes, all men.
And silence is guilt. So let's move forward.
All right. We also acknowledge on this topic the intersections as we kind of continue to process through our own heteronormative worldview. We do understand that misogyny affects many people. We are conscious of the LGBTQ community, particularly the trans community, where you may have some questions about, you know, how they're affected or whatever, but we understand that this is not just man to woman.
Right.
And we also acknowledge, and in my case, apologize up front if it seems that way as we talk about it, just because life experience has done that. Yeah. We're trying to work through it, but, you know, we're not going to be clean on this one. And also, I'm going to apologize in advance, I guess.
Don't apologize.
Well, I just feel weird because I'm a man talking through it, and I'm a man explaining things, and I don't want to.
But that's valuable.
Yes, but I do recognize that mansplaining is a thing. But
a huge thing.
I don't think you want to sit and listen to, like,
I'm not gonna let it happen.
Silence. So
I'm not gonna let it happen.
I'm gonna do my best to to not be such a man.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay.
So,
from ashy to classy, what do we mean when we say someone is ashy?
So, when we say that somebody is ashy, we are just acknowledging that their point of view is dried up. It is it is not fresh.
Okay.
It's old. So, when you think about, and it's, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but this is why I love, you know, all things black across social media, because we funny. I think that social media has allowed for people who otherwise might not engage or might not speak on certain things to just offer their opinions. And, you know, ashiness is just this thing that just says that, you know, wherever you might, whatever has been expressed is no longer current for where the conversation now is. So ashiness kind of comes up a lot when we're talking about behavior from men to women and the issues with misogyny in this conversation, because in talking about positioning and talking about these issues, we realize that some people's points of view are kind of outdated and archaic.
And for anyone who may not be familiar with the traditional use of the word ashy, I mean, it is when your skin is dry. And
you need moisture.
And you don't want to be in that position. Like, you know, you meet someone that you're attracted to or whatever. Right. You reach out to shake their hand and the hand is ashy and it's rough. And it's like, why is your hand so rough? Whole situation is ruined. You don't ever want to be caught being ashy.
You just
want to make sure this is not your thing.
Right. So, exactly. You want to make sure that there's some lotion very close.
So we're going to lotion some of our
to moisturize the situation. Okay. So we could stretch so that we could grow.
All right. Misogyny. And, well, it's hard for me to talk about misogyny without describing patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I see it, patriarchy is the overarching system.
Yes.
It's a collection of things that impact the way women move through the world or oppress women.
Okay.
Or actually prioritize men is probably how I would phrase that.
So can I offer?
Help me out.
So yeah, here's the definition. So patriarchy, a system of society or government in which the father or eldest male is head of the family and descent is traced through the male line. Also, a system of society or government in which men hold the power and women are largely excluded from that power. Mm-hmm. A society or community organized on patriarchal lines. So for the purpose of this conversation, we are more so talking about point number two,
right,
which is a system in which men hold the power and women are largely excluded from it.
Correct.
Point number two is based on the fact that our society is point number one, where most of the families that establish monarchies are tracked through that male heir and that male line. So that's a patriarchal line of succession, like what we have in England currently. Like currently you have a queen, but she has an oldest son, and the son, regardless of the other women that have been born into the family, Charles is the oldest, and then he has two sons, his oldest son. And I think when Princess Charlotte, when Will had his daughter, the fact that he had a son after her, she got moved out of order for next in line to the throne. She's not next. So that's how patriarchy works.
I don't know any of these people.
Oh my gosh.
I don't care.
Well, that's where patriarchy comes from.
Okay. In the context of patriarchy, misogyny, you have a thing for that before I go off and say something weird?
It's not going to be weird.
Okay.
You want me to say first?
No, because I want to get it wrong and then you can.
Okay, no problem. Go ahead.
Straighten it out. So looking at misogyny as the behaviors that enforce the system of patriarchy. So the easy analogy is the patriarchy is the law and misogyny is the law enforcement officer.
Yes, very good.
So anytime someone gets out of line, let's say in expected gender roles or anything like that, expressing agency and things like that, the misogyny is the thing that slaps the woman back into place and says, no, this is where we have you slotted.
Exactly.
You can't move beyond that.
Rage Against the Machine. Okay, so here it says misogyny is the dislike of, contempt for, or ingrained prejudice against women. It comes from the Greek misos, for hatred, and also gune, woman. Mm-hmm. So it's a Greek-rooted word, and it didn't come about until the 17th century. This also says misogyny is the hatred of, contempt for, prejudice against women or girls. Misogyny is manifest in numerous ways, including social exclusion, sex discrimination, hostility, androcentrism, patriarchy, male privilege, belittling of women, violence against women, and sexual objectification.
Hmm.
Ooh, that's a lot. That's a hell of a list.
Yeah, it's hard to avoid all
this. My goodness.
I see what's happening now. So, all right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about escaping misogyny, and I guess we should talk a little bit about, you know, how we get to this point in the first. I mean, this is the oldest form of discrimination.
Mm.
People upset about race. People upset about all types of things. This one is the one.
Like, yeah.
And this is so old that it has baked into many of our creation stories.
Yes.
So in the Christian creation story, the patriarchy is there in, well, both are there in how Eve is viewed. So first of all, she's in the first creation story, she's created second almost as an afterthought. Like, you create the man. Man, it's not good for man to be here by himself. Let's figure out something for him.
Right.
You know, and this is after man is looking around. The lion has someone. The elephant has someone. I don't have anything. And so God creates a man. It's so terrible. So
I mean, it's a story.
Yes. Yeah,
it becomes terrible, all the guilt that is laid on her feet right. after.
So then after that, we talked in our non-monogamy episode about how and why creation myths are started. And I think we discussed that they're written after the fact to explain something that's being experienced. Mm-hmm. So in one sense, they're looking at agricultural infertility and infertility and childbirth. And so the creation myth accounts for those things. Likewise, they look at the structure of the society where women are positionally with mm-hmm. reference to the men, and that gets written into part of the story to reinforce what's going on.
Right.
And so you see Eve created last, you know, she's the one that's responsible for the sin. She's the one that's tricked into eating this fruit, and it's she's the one that's blamed when when the time comes. There's a lot there, and that's in the Christian worldview, that's the start of the world.
Yeah.
Like, she's already messing it up for everybody. And how do you not internalize that, whether you're a man or a woman, and say, right. from a man's perspective, like, that woman you gave me, or from a woman's perspective, like, why the hell it got to be me? Like, mm-hmm. why couldn't be? He ate it too. Like, he was the one that got the command. Like, it's just, it brings up so many things at the start of everything. And that's in the Judeo-Christian creation story. But, I mean, if we look at the Greco-Roman creation, Pandora, the first created woman,
mm-hmm.
she was given this jar and she was supposed to not open the jar.
Like, and then Eve was supposed to
not see. She opened the jar
yeah.
and let out all this evil and pain and all that stuff. And so now it's Pandora's fault mm-hmm. that all of this evil and pain is unleashed on
Hence
the world.
Pandora's box.
Yeah, so, I mean, mm-hmm. and again, these are things that people are writing myths to reinforce something that is already happening, because no one's writing a creation myth.
Right.
During the formation. So mm-hmm. this is after the fact. It's an observed interaction that they're right. writing into it.
Right.
Then you got Plato that comes along with his dualism, where he's basically saying all of the good stuff is not with us in the body. It's with the gods, and intellect is the height of that, and the man is the intellect, and then the woman has the other stuff, which is stuck here, and that becomes the stuff that you don't want to be a part of, and it's, you know, lascivious and all this stuff mm-hmm. things. And then you got his disciple Aristotle, who comes back with his even more wretched, you know, what did he say? He
Trash.
Said women are less developed men, females are less developed males. This is evidenced by the fact that they have hair for some reason. There's a good reason, because as the men aged in Roman society, mm-hmm. they lost their hair.
Okay.
So the older you get, the more wisdom you achieve, you lose hair.
Oh.
But the women have all this hair, and they're so childish because they don't even lose their hair. And it's so weird, but this becomes part mm-hmm. of the culture.
And this goes back to the fact that whoever controls the telling of the story can always put themselves yeah. in the position of victor. So even in the writing or the documenting of the creation myths or the documenting of these philosophies, you have to understand that these types of stories result from women not even being present in the schools or in the priesthood to counteract that type of information or energy. So when you're not there, you can't control how mm-hmm. you're going to be described.
Yeah. So it takes work to get rid of some of this stuff, because mm-hmm. we're talking about ancient creation myths, but those cultures influenced heavily Western culture,
mm-hmm.
Roman culture especially, and then also from a Judeo-Christian lens, that is also influences. I mean, it's just one of those things that's very difficult to escape from when it is part of the fabric of mm-hmm. how you believe we came to be as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to do the work to get out of here. So I guess I want to talk about this system is a system that both men and women, and also non-binary folks,
mm-hmm.
are living in yeah. at all times.
Yeah.
That stands a reason that we both are affected.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we affected differently?
I mean, in a myriad of ways. The first thing to understand is that even though we're talking about misogyny affects men. because it limits the full spectrum of their expression, right. personal expression, as well as verbal expression of ideas and thoughts that might not go along with the norm or whatever present group think might be going on. So we see this, the probably the best example to make is like a school study group, where if the study group is five kids and three of which are girls, the girls could have straight A's and the boys won't really want to study with them because of ingrained ideas of what it would be to get help from a girl, or from that girl being a more high-powered student mm-hmm. than the boy. Mm-hmm. The expectation that because he is a boy, even if that is not explicitly stated, when you're growing up in a patriarchal society, things don't even have to be explicitly stated for them to be reinforced. So like when I used to work in programs that developed IT and engineering students, we would talk about how girls are susceptible to not having academic support because people already think they're predestined to fail, regardless of the fact that wow. the girl might be the better student in the study group mm-hmm. or, you know, in the position to be a tutor. She might not be selected as a tutor by another student because that student says she's a girl. She's not going to be able to know how to do it. And that affects boys because ultimately, you know, you're not getting the help that you need because you've been told that that particular resource will never be a good resource. It affects the whole pipeline from who's in your class to who teaches your class to who's at your organization and who runs your who's your manager. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about diversity, we have to talk about gender diversity because men and women are expected to move through the world using different tools and interacting with each other and organizations and systems differently. So we have two different problem solving schema. We do things differently. So when boys or men are excluded from women offering their experience mm-hmm. as a enrichment, they miss out on all that they could learn from that experience. Whereas, you know, people don't even really want to cut men off when they're speaking. Woman starts speaking, you cut her off. You know, how are we affected differently? I think that there are real tangible effects. One, misogyny can be dangerous for women. It can promote violence. It can lead to her death. Misogynistic actions and behaviors can lead to a woman's death, which also affects her perpetrator, especially if it is a man. Our money. I don't know how I skipped over that. Mm-hmm. Preconceived notions about the worth of a person's work and their output. When you add value to that, you'll find yourselves paying more to get less, because you're not paying who's actually doing the work. And I think it's the same question, you know, instead of thinking about it between men and women, there is a way to overlap that with, you know, like questions of race. You know, what happens when you only have all white men in a room and there's not one person, even if it's another man of color in there? Well, then you run the risk of having a very homogenous experience represented. Mm-hmm. The same thing goes for a room full of men, regardless of their racial background, and one woman. Like your organization is saying that, for instance, let's say hypothetically, VMI, which was a military.
Virginia Military Institute.
Yeah, Military Institute was all men. And then about 25 years ago, they admitted their first woman. She only stayed for like a week because it was ridiculous. But that's neither here nor there. So let's say Virginia Military Institute says, oh, well, you know, we've had women here for 25 years and we're going to go one step further. They would never do this, but we're going to go one step further. And now we're going to have, you know, gender neutral bathrooms or something like that. And in the gender neutral bathrooms, people just think that you just need a toilet and a urinal, but you didn't realize that when you got rid of all the female bathrooms, you got rid of all of the little stuff that, you know, we would use for, you know, menstruation and stuff like that. So it's not in the gender neutral bathroom.
Cause we don't know what's in there. Like we're not supposed to go in there. So I don't
right.
know.
But if your design team is all men.
All men, yeah, you would have no idea.
It's not going to come up.
The most I know is occasionally the door closes a little slow and I look in there, I see a couch in there. I see maybe a floral arrangement. I'm like, what the hell? We don't have any
right.
of this stuff in there.
And if women are not in there, you might not get feedback that says that if you're going to take away five of our stalls, you need to add back at least two bathrooms because you know, it takes, we need a stall. It takes us longer to go to the bathroom or whatever the case may be. So that goes back to design and usage. Like, we do things differently, or we've been made to do them traditionally differently. So we know, you know, we know how we've been asked to do them versus how we want them to function. I've worked with professionals who love to work with women because they don't get that type of feedback. I'm talking about IT recruiters who wouldn't have ever thought about coding a certain type of way. Mm-hmm. But here's something that would help a woman at work.
Yeah.
And it's specifically a product for her at work. And they're like, I want that, because they want to bring it to the market. Why? Because women are half of the population and we're participating and we're present, but you don't see us at the highest representations of that power or that authority.
Yeah. Also, I know from the effect on men, I can at least speak to this part with some knowledge. It affects how much of your humanity is it okay to express.
Yeah.
So as you're growing up, men and women or boys and girls are slotted into their expectations, whether it's, you know, the girls act this way, they're doing these things, and the boys act this way, or they're not doing these things that are also in, that are in the other bin, which means it's difficult to cry and, you know, if somebody hurts you or something happens, you don't, and you
to show your emotional side.
So that,
because things are attributed to girl behavior,
right? Over years, that builds up, and then you end up with a grown man who doesn't know how to process these emotions because they, that was never allowed. And then that grown man is out here hurting other people now because they weren't allowed to access to those emotions. And I mean, that's nowhere near as severe as potentially being killed, but the harm that is inflicted because that person was restricted as a human proliferates and hurts other people.
It could hurt themselves too. You know, when people get it's not a direct correlation between, let's say, mental health awareness and misogyny, but you have to understand that misogyny, just like racism, is an outward reflection of how you are processing information about a group. And you can become fixated on that. You can be, you can become fixated on your own ideas and your own perspective about this particular group. And just like, you know, we deal with conspiracy theories, you know, in politics or whatever else, people have conspiracy theories about women. They are comfortable expressing these, let's say, wayward ideas or unfounded ideas about women. And it, and when you dig deeper, you find out that these things are being expressed because it's based on something that somebody heard somewhere. That it, it might not have been a real experience to them. For instance, oh, all women lie, or she might be promiscuous or something. You know, a woman, any woman who goes to the club every week is a hoe or something crazy like that. Not that these two things correlate. Never crosses your mind that she could either work there, she likes to dance, it's her jam, you know, that's what she likes to do. Every woman that goes to do this one particular thing is not one particular thing. But when you say that, and then that becomes amplified, and that becomes, you know, the going thing, when these things are repeated and they're hurled as insults to other people, you don't realize what you might open up in them. That might not be the first time that that young lady has heard that, right? So I'm hearing it from my partner, but my partner's not aware that that's what my father said.
Yeah, that's
so
unintended.
I mean, but it can snowball. It's just like, but it's this idea of taking this one unfounded stereotype that isn't even your experience, and now you are repeating it as truth, and you're broad brushing, you know, the whole entire group this particular way. And that happens, you know, that example might seem a little, you know, surface and shallow, but those have deeper repercussions, because in an affirmation to a woman's humanity, so what if that's what she wants to do?
Yeah. Let me give you a more surface example. When I was in a freshman in undergrad, I got an Eddie Bauer coat. This was a big thing then. And this was like not the current versions of Eddie Bauer. This was the older
the Big
one.
Bear.
The Big Bear.
Yeah.
And it was a big, huge coat. So I get the coat. and I'm excited to wear it. The thing cost, at the time, it was like $400. Yeah. It was very expensive, whatever. This, people was getting shot over this coat and stuff. I don't know why. So anyway, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is, I wore the coat just near my school. There was like a Burlington coat factory. Mm-hmm. And a couple of my friends wanted to go there to get their coats. They don't sell the Eddie Bauer in the Burlington Coat Factory. Whatever. So I wore my Eddie Bauer because I was trying to stunt on them because they was going to get the Burlington Coat Factory drink.
Petty.
So what's happening is I'm in the store and I'm walking through the aisle. And you know how Burlington just kind of stuffs everything in there. And it's no room. So I'm just walking through. I'm knocking everything off. And I didn't realize it at first until I looked back and I saw all these coats on the ground. And that's kind of how I see my misogyny working as I grow up with things that I don't know that is causing other things, other people harm around me. Like, I'm just hurting people and doing all this stuff and not realizing that I'm just walking. I think I'm just walking through.
Right.
But because I got all this extra stuff with me that I probably should have never had, stuff that I learned from uncles growing up and other role models who maybe were not the best role models or just didn't have an understanding of the type of harm they could do.
Right.
I learned those things and I carried them with me and I just ended up knocking a lot of stuff down. And it's just one of those things where it doesn't feel good to know after the fact that you've hurt all of these people if you're any type of decent human being.
Right.
You want to be like, nah, I gotta be better about this. And this is, I guess, kind of how journeys can start.
I mean it all starts with a decision to learn to do better, right? So the saying goes, you know, if you know better, do better. So now that you know better, you've actually been doing better. You know, you say you're in North Carolina. I'm hoping that you're like closer to like maybe Alexandria, honestly, on your journey to freedom, because I think that there's a lot of value to the intention. I think that if anybody were sounding an alarm or why do a show like this, is that we see that people are not aware. A lot of things come down to awareness. Not that the information is not being discussed, but are you listening to it? Mm-hmm. You know, and we talk about the climate and the environment that we're in and socially, politically, spiritually, all of this stuff. And one of the things that is consistent across all of those different areas in our life is this persistent idea that women are somehow not equal. Mm-hmm. Even if you're giving lip service to it, it's like at the end of the day, she's not. Well, you know, 49% to my 50, yeah. And I can justify shaving off that 1%. And it's not always about the ego of the next man closest to her. It could be about that system. And, you know, when you say, how does misogyny affect us? There is a saying that says that if the cure for cancer is trapped in a girl's brain, we might not never know what it is because of what is said to her when she's being educated. Right. So, and I would have never thought about that. But then it's like, yeah, because if I convince you in the sixth and seventh grade that you will never be good at math or science.
Right.
And now you doubling down in English because that's what you were told, because you were told that you like to read as opposed to, you know, the fact that you really love math. That's a one off. Or the fact that you really were into, you know, doing formulas and equations and you was with the shits in biology, that ain't real, you know. That's just a hobby for you. But if it's amazing that we would not nurture that, you know, and nurture it early, because if we lose her then, you don't ever really get her back. You don't ever really get her back. So there are real, you know, outcomes to this, but we talk about these things because it gets hard. You know, we talked about the intersections earlier and where race and gender intersect for me, that's heavy. You know what I mean? The last thing I need or the last thing I welcome into my mental and emotional and physical space is a man who needs to feel better about his situation by compromising how I feel about my own. And that happens, and whether it's intentional or not, I think the acknowledgement and the intention of, and let's do better, that has a lot of value, because we've talked about churches that speak almost hate, for lack of a better term, directly to the women that keep them churches open, right? And places going where you're loved and going where you're affirmed, and that list should include your house of worship. And when people think critically, we don't want you to get stuck at when you thought about all the places where you receive a solid human experience, your church is not on the list. Or your I don't know, it could be anything, because again, misogyny and misogynoir affect Black women amongst Black women. When we start henpecking and doing a bunch of stuff to one another, 9 times out of 10, I don't even have to do with how we feel about ourselves. It's what we've been told to feel about the next woman. It's a competition. It's a, she can't be trusted. I don't like to be around a whole bunch of girls because they with all the drama. I like to hang out with the boys, you know, not realizing that that actually puts you in a precarious position sometimes with the boys. Because if you, and that could be straight up and cool, like you could be cool, you could be the little sister, but to outside eyes, all it would take is them doing what? Taking a stereotype, a chick who hangs out with that many dudes, it gotta be this type of chick, mm-hmm. and he done ran back, and that's your reputation, that's your character. And it could lead to bullying, and it could be dangerous for you. So it's a lot. Like, this is not something that you just jump in and jump right back out, but it's just like, for people who think that they're doing better because they stop saying the word bitch,
right.
you got to do a little bit more. You know, for people who think they're doing better because they've stopped hurling, you know, insults or, you know, they've stopped.
Calling women females.
No, but they haven't stopped that. That's something okay, that they refuse to stop.
Just explain it for the people who, I don't know why. Want me to explain it so you don't have to?
No, I mean, because I'm just going to go straight to it. Like a female what? Yeah. When you call a woman a female, that's like calling her a diet bitch, and you just really need to stop it. Yeah. I hate to be so loud about it, but that's really what it is. And it's a way to... it's a way to negate her humanity. If you walk into a room and you say, all right, you know, good evening, females and gentlemen, you would never do that. You would say ladies and gentlemen, or you would say women and men or something. Right. But when you say men and females, you would literally just say, okay, so then like a female human.
Yeah, she's a female human. So crabs are females. Like I order a dozen female crabs. That's different. They don't have woman for a crab.
Exactly.
But for a human woman, have woman, so that's what you should be using.
Yeah, and like even if you would talk about boys and girls, no, stupid, you're not gonna go around and say boys and little females, but you're willing to say girl, but you don't realize that you called a 40-year-old woman a girl. You see what I'm saying? So it's kind of just like pay attention to the language. Language is so important, because language then forms how we think about certain issues. We're gonna think about people and issues and places according to the language that we've attached to it. So how we speak about women is how we end up thinking about women, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So if you get a lot of people around you who are porn females, you know what I mean? You might not think, like, I hate to be the person in a conversation with somebody who I know don't even mean it. And then I'd be like, so why? So maybe you don't have to, because I don't want to do all that work, right? Because then you might find out that you're not the only person who's tried to do the work. That the person is just like, this is what I feel like saying. Or I don't see the big deal. And then when you turn around and you start using males, because I'm that type of jerk, they're like, why are you doing that? And I'm like, language. Yeah. Right? But I try to get it back, because you don't realize how certain things manifest depending on how a person has either been discussed or how they've been talked to.
Right.
So a lot of things manifest in your behavior based on how you've been discussed or how you've been taught and talked to. So there are a lot of things that women could be doing better for themselves, but they have to unlearn all of that messaging that is carried on the wings of misogyny within a patriarchal system that says that she is to be regarded this way.
So how do we, I guess I can talk about myself at some point, but I'm going to talk about how you actually start the journey. Like, there's some discovery that has to take place that, wait a minute, something is unequal, or this is not quite the way it should be, or maybe I said something I thought was innocuous and they came back and explained to me in very clear language why it wasn't.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of reasons why that journey would be started, but I'm trying to think of what it was for me. I don't remember if there was like something that was the impetus to me actually starting this, but I do remember, like, wait a minute, this has got to be tough for women. Like, I think for me, it was easier to understand through an intersection, and that intersection was, maybe an analogy is more accurate, like through race. Mm-hmm. Race helped me understand that this is a different thing for women than it is for me. Like, I'm like, I experience a different America than a white person, and a woman experiences a different America than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the way I experience mine. And I'm sure they don't like the way they experience theirs.
Right.
But I also expect someone who is having that different experience to acknowledge, to work, to make sure that those experiences level out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the work that I should be doing.
Exactly.
And I guess that's kind of like that's my true north or my guiding principle as I'm going through trying to figure this stuff out and I'm making mistakes and stuff like that. It's easier for me to reflect back and say, well, what would I want white people to do or people in power to do for people who aren't?
So for me, it's more so recognizing how much misogynistic behavior and attitude I had about other women.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that probably started in late high school, like last couple years of high school, and definitely going to college, because one, I was reading more. So I was aware. So you're talking about the fact that, you know, you experience a different America than your white male counterpart. And I would offer that a black female is experiencing a different America, not only from her white female counterpart, but also from her black male counterpart. Yeah. So that's where we're intersecting with that. And I have definitely had my fair share of, you know, contention with people who fall into those very big bins, you know, of classification. But I also recognize that to be black and female is to be the exact opposite of white and male. So there are some things that I see in the power dynamic there that are there. It's loaded history. Mm-hmm. So and there are change agents, and there are historians, and there are educators, faith leaders. There are a host of people who are doing that important work of unearthing that, because when you go really deep with that, there's pain there, and there is a clear line between being the product and being the producer when you talk about those power dynamics. Outside of that, I just realized that I was carrying attitude toward other women that wasn't germane to me. I was mimicking things that I had heard, and even more, the fact that I was thoughtful was working in my favor, because I was like, you know what? This girl might not be mean just because she ain't got nothing else better to do, but what if she's bullied like I am and it's coming out like this? Or, well, y'all talk about her all day. You know, I would just find myself thinking about these things. You know, high school, everybody joning or whatever, whatever. And it's like you take it too far and then somebody mad. And you'd be like, hey, why are they mad? But you know why they mad, because you just didn't let up. Well, when I got to college, I just didn't want to... I challenged myself in that space, because I just didn't want to be the woman who was calling everybody else a bitch and angry and mad all the time and not knowing what that was about, especially if that particular person had not, you know, done something to me. I can't just, you know, walk around and just be like, oh, forget all y'all. Something about that didn't sit right with me. As I went deeper, I realized it was about the messaging and what we say to one another. One of the lenses I looked at through that was colorism, valuing certain characteristics and women who look a certain way over other women who look a certain way, have a more Europeanized standard versus a more African or black representation in their skin and in their hair. And I was like, who's benefiting from that? And then you start to sit back and you listen. You listen for people who say everybody has preferences. But then when you hear people completely disqualifying a chance at love, or, you know, I just don't want this person in my picture because of how they look, you know, that resonates with you, because you can't really change that. You know, regardless of what I do, I'm not ever really going to take my skin off.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to take my skin off. I could lose a ton of weight. I'm still going to have the same body type. If it come back, it's gonna come back the same way, that type of thing. So I was trying to get at the heart of it, and what helped me was seeing better representation of women working together beyond all these different barriers that I've been told that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So that work started early. Then what we found was like organizations that made that work, amplified that work. So NCNW does their part and the sororities do their part. And then I feel like we had these informal programs too, but I just wanted to participate because I had to unseat a lot of that. I just did not want all my affirmation coming from a man. Mm. I really didn't. Because a large amount of it did. I was blessed to have, you know, my dads, my brothers, my uncles. I'm the baby. Like, people adore me. You know what I mean? Not thankfully, but, you know, I did not grow up in this environment where I am not getting any love. But I also noticed those comments that were made about color, hair, affiliation. And I was like, why are we doing that to one another? Mm. Why are the women doing that to one another? So, and it is a journey. I'm not doing all the things I used to do, or saying all the things that I used to say. And I'm not trying to be perfect because I'm a human, but.
Yeah, you're just trying to be better. And yeah, I guess
just better.
In sharing a few things that I've learned on my journey, and this is absolutely not to pat myself on the back or anything like that, because I do have a long, I still think I'm still south of where I need to be.
Okay,
I need
to get there. Richard, but, that's fine.
One of the things that helped me tremendously was the women that I had around me. I was fortunate enough to have women like you and Tia and people like that, like Jazz Hands, and like at different times would point out different things. Mm-hmm. Or I would just be around listening, and maybe I didn't make a mistake that day, but I'm just listening to a conversation that I'm not the center of, and I learned something. Mm-hmm. I also would try to do the work of, you know, exposing myself to other voices. Mm-hmm. So for instance, in church spaces, I think it's important to have different types of theologies presented, not just European theology, but theologies around liberation and womanist theologies and queer theologies and things like that. I think it's important to get those voices in. But for this type of growth, it was important for me to read, you know, bell hooks and Audre Lorde, and it was important for me to actually educate myself without having to put all of that pressure on the women that are around me, which I'm appreciative of, but they shouldn't have to do all the work.
All right, we don't want to do the emotional lifting.
Like, it really helped this one, like getting in spaces where I was not
the scent.
Yeah, I wasn't the majority voice. I wasn't even, I could just be there and listen and be uncomfortable at some of the things that are said. And I was privileged to be in spaces where people felt comfortable around me enough to talk and say, men ain't shit. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, we not. Tell me more.
Right. Explain.
So, I mean, it's that type of stuff that kind of helped me think about things differently, right, where I would not have had I not entered those spaces or listened to those conversations or read that those ideas. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's a long process.
It's a process, and just because we're talking about the misogyny side doesn't mean that there isn't another side where people have learning and growth to do on really appreciating and respecting the full spectrum of perspectives that are black and male. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But this, I think misogyny is a worthy issue to look at, because it is so pervasive. And when you become aware, you see where the messaging and where the conditioning starts so early. And like something that comes up amongst, let's say, I don't know. I mean, amongst black women is, you know, don't wait until you have a daughter to care about how she's spoken to or how she's treated or how she's engaged and how she's respected. Because, you know, you would think that it could go without saying, but it's so many women in partnership who find themselves having to, you know, remind their partner, you do know I'm somebody's daughter. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can't pedestalize your daughter and treat me like trash. You do, like, or devalue me and think that she's not going to see that regardless of what you say. Mm-hmm. I think there's equal and opposite encouragement to make sure that black women are not doing that to their sons. You know what I mean? Right. But trauma being what it is, I think you fall into a cycle where people cannot break the messaging because of not only the messages they receive. If I'm receiving toxicity, you're not going to get clean water out of me. Yeah. Right? So you have to be careful about what you, I'm always concerned about this because co-parenting vexes me, but just to observe it and to participate in it and on some level, but it's like, yo, you can't pour salt in and get out sugar. You cannot. So be careful about what you pour into people, period, so that you can get good things out, you know, or get, you don't, so many people don't want to reap what they've sown, either with the apathy and being ignorant of certain things or the things they've done with intention. And this is a conversation that to me has started before this episode and will continue on because there's so many different iterations of this. Like, if you think back to an episode we did a while ago about the Alabama, recounting the Alabama election, and we looked at black women and their voter turnout data was like
97%.
Basically, I'm caping up. 97% says I'm caping up. I'm caping up, and I just caped up in the previous national election. Yeah. When you look at the fact that black men are not 97% or better,
right?
I feel like that deviation on the data has to do with the entrenched roots of, we don't care what they're doing. Our interest could be that of the males without it having to be that of the African Americans or whatever. So, because we don't do things. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You see that voter day, you'd be like, what?
Yeah, it shouldn't be that way. And so, for some of the guys who may be interested in taking this journey.
Come on.
For what I'm about to say, do not say this, but know this. But don't say it because you're going to get in trouble. Don't say it. Know it. In the same way slaves needed the abolitionists, the white abolitionists, the free blacks needed the white abolitionists to come alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the same way that in that Civil War, we needed people other than slaves fighting that.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way European Jews needed someone other than European Jews to help liberate them. Like, that is necessary. That is not for you to go into the space and say, y'all need me to do this. But
because that's misogyny.
But you are needed. Like, to
you
because
are.
if let's say that 97% goes up another 3%, that's the max.
Right.
You still can get more out of your men on the other side of that.
So this goes back to what you opened with, where you said not all men.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, every last one of y'all, because it's your homeboy. You know what I mean? And it's more valuable for the either the critique or the correction or the encouragement to come from somebody who is in your group, who you might view as non-threatening. This is basic communication so that you can get the message. Because if I keep saying something, you will be like, I ain't listening to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try my hardest not to broad brush, but I do not make excuses for, yo, if your homeboy is wilding and you let him, you are complicit.
Yep.
You are complicit.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the work.
We got to get to work. And that's, I mean, we all got to get north so that we can get there together, because we got
to
stop this one. I mean, we said this was the oldest one. We should be working on this one the hardest. This one should have been done, and it's not done. So we got a lot of work to do. So I hope we can get there.
Yeah.
I hope we can get classy, because I'm
seeing ashy is not an option.
I'm seeing a lot of ashy people too.
Yes, and y'all got to let it go. Like, seriously, we'll revisit this because
we're better when we're not doing. So here's the thing about oppression, and I know we got to go, but for most systems in this world, there is an oppressor and an oppressed person.
Yeah.
Okay. The goal of that oppressed person cannot be to sit in the seat of the oppressor.
Like, right.
Because then you're just doing the thing that you didn't want to be done to you. You know what that feels like. You know why that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
The goal has to be to blow that system up.
Has to be freedom.
So no one is in that.
Nothing less than that.
And that's where we got to get with it. Like, this is not an exchange of seats.
Mm-mm.
This is something else. This is.
And I guess the encouragement is to, you know, raise your own awareness about your thoughts and your attitudes, and then challenge yourself, you know, and be open to the critique. You know, if you, first of all, most people would say if you have to ask how much it is, you can't afford it, or if you have to ask, then you something, whatever. But this is something you should be asking about. Yeah. You should be talking to your sisters, or, you know, women in your family. You should be talking to people that you trust. You should be talking to people that you respect, and getting feedback on whether or not you are being perceived the way that you want to present yourself. You know, we don't know that all the time because we're not open to the feedback. How are other people experiencing us? Mm-hmm. We just know what we intend. So a great place to start is just being open to hearing from others how they experience you, because and I think that is empowering across the board, regardless of, you know, how far back or how ashy you might be. You know, if you don't know how it's already been, how you're currently being perceived, you don't even know where you could be growing to. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's just one thing. Like, yo, just be open, just talk.
Yeah, I just realized that I need to finish out that analogy, because it was if I leave it that way, it was going the wrong way. For the men who are in the oppressed position, as that system is leveling off, the temptation is to feel like you're being oppressed, because now you're no longer in that high seat.
All right.
Be mindful that you're not being oppressed. You're raising.
Good job.
You're evening this out. Because before it was just like, women don't, like, that wasn't what I was saying. What I'm saying is, men, it may feel like that. It's not like that. The system has to be changed.
Right.
And so we hope that we can all get from ashy to classy. And
We're committed. We're committed to this journey right here.
For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.